Well, anyway, Harry, thanks for joining us on the Illinois Labor Hour, and I understand that you have a pretty big week coming up.
Oh, yes. Of course, there's the convention, which will take place on from the 25th to the 28th. And I am a candidate, as you know, and on the third day, there will be nominations. And I have a delegate who will nominate me for the position of a member of the Executive Council. There are 51 members on the Executive Council.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And I have a number of interviews, and also on Tuesday evening, I will be addressing a large rank-and-file meeting that is specially being prepared now, and I'll have quite a lot to say.
Oh, okay.
At that meeting.
Oh, yeah. Well, when and where is that?
It will be at the Hotel Drake.
The Hotel Drake?
Between 6 and 10 o'clock on Tuesday evening.
Oh, okay. Between 6 and 10 and Tuesday evening at the Hotel Drake.
Right.
And, well, anyway, what are you going to talk about at that meeting?
Well, first of all, I'm going to explain my candidacy. Why is a 91-year-old man running for a seat on the council? The fact of the matter is I've scored a victory already. I've forced the AFL-CIO to have an actual election with a printed ballot and a secret voting.
Oh.
You know, the last three elections, in 1997, 1999, and 2001, there wasn't any election, actually. They had the slate that was nominated, and there was no opposition, no debate, no discussion. No campaigning, and it went through three times the same folk. And that's terrible. In other words, they're freezing the leadership. For the past 10 years, the same leaders have been in office, and they've never been challenged. Well, I'm challenging them.
Right.
That's one thing. But I'm also a serious candidate. You know, I have a record that I believe is superior to about 90% of the Executive Council.
Yeah, I mentioned a little bit of that in your introduction. You started out...
Yeah, I've written pamphlets. I know a hell of a lot more about union organizing than they do. And I have some ideas of how to proceed. And I have other principles that I would like to have adopted. And I will be presenting those. By the way, I will be sending, on the first day of the convention, that's the 25th, I have a leaflet that will be going to every delegate. There will probably be about 900 of them, outlining my program.
Oh, okay. Could you give some features of your program now?
Well, first of all, on organizing, which is, of course, the most important issue. The unions haven't organized the past 10, 20 years, and they're losing members, and they don't know how to do it. And what is Sweeney and Stern proposing? More money. Stern has an additional thing. We'll have 15 mega unions who will condense the AFL-CIO to some particularly more powerful unions, and that'll make a difference. It won't. What they're missing, and it's quite obvious to me and to a lot of rank-and-filers, is what if they're going to try to increase their membership, they have to appeal to and involve rank-and-filers from across the country. They know how to organize. They've been organized. They know how to talk to the unorganized. They know all the arguments. They can show them samples of contracts. They can discuss the fears that workers have about organizing. All of that. Well, Stern and Sweeney are absolutely ignoring that. It's a power struggle between the two of them.
Yeah,
and
that's...
it's the kind of struggle that no matter who wins, workers will lose. And it seems that they're forgetting that this is about the need for workers to have a good, decent standard of living, that workers are suffering in job losses, outsourcing, health care costs are rising, pensions, they're suffering from losses of pensions, and a lot of other things. And that doesn't seem to be playing very well, except in the rhetoric. But they're not doing anything about that. And so I'll be talking about that. I'll be going around for the, when I arrive there on the 22nd, I'll be campaigning for five days, visiting rank and file groups, talking to people as much as I can.
Okay, what else do you have?
Well, there's another thing. There's a concentration of power going on. The large international unions want to have executive committee and the council itself just confined to union presidents. Now, that means that if the top 15 international unions, the large ones, there is no woman who is the president of those. That means that the women will be disenfranchised. And women represent 43% of the union membership. They won't have a voice at all under the proposals that the large unions will be attempting to put over at the convention. And by the way, both if there's a conflict between Sweeney and Stern, what they both agree on in both camps is that the power should be limited to international presidents. And minorities will take a beating. So these are serious things. And I want to speak up for the rank and file, for women and minorities as well.
Yeah.
No one else will be.
Yeah, and beyond that, it doesn't look very good when you're trying to organize women and minorities.
Yeah, they're trying to, and how can they do that by disenfranchising them? You tell me.
Yeah. In my opinion, I think that all this should be done by the rank and file anyway.
Right, and what I'm saying is that there ought to be an open election so that candidates will be have to campaign and compete on an equal level. Right now, if past practice holds, the executive, Sweeney and the Stern people will come in with a slate, 51 members, and it'll be all over. No real election, except I'll be a candidate challenging him. But I'm not a powerhouse. You know, I've got the support of the rank and file, but the rank and file doesn't have the votes at the convention. Do you understand that point?
Oh, yes, true. And
so I got people who will be coming to the convention demonstrating, but they're not sitting inside the convention hall and voting as delegates. I will have some delegate support, of course.
That's right.
But not sufficient to override the big powerhouse boys.
Well, who gets to be a delegate to this convention?
I'm sorry?
Who gets to be a delegate?
Well, they're elected, for example, in the international, take the SEIU, service employees. They're entitled to 22 delegates. So usually the president appoints them. And each of those delegates, by the way, has 57,000 votes. Can you get that picture?
Wow, I think 57,000.
Well, the president of the New York State Federation of Labor has one vote, and he deals with 2 million members. It's cockeyed. It's crazy. But one of the terrible things about it is that it freezes the leadership. There will be no new leaders. No one coming up with talent and charisma and experienced leadership has a chance. Can't get in if he's not an international president.
Yeah, and it doesn't open up very much for
it opens nothing
for new ideas either.
They don't want changes. They don't. They're nervous about new ideas.
And that's something that you just running and creating the need for an election and some debate that helps a little bit there.
It helps a little bit, but I'm trying to break the ice. I'm trying to encourage more activity to avoid or to change these terrible things which have been holding the labor movement back. You know, both Sweeney and Stern take no blame whatsoever for the decline in union power. They've been in office for 10 years. What have they done? What are the new things that they're offering? More money? Is that going to do it? Not at all. Never. And so what we may have is four more years of decline, of a lack of a concentrated program to improve the lot of working people. That's in the cards, unless I can somehow provide inspiration to others to challenge that. What I think would be great, and it's a long shot, is to have an election where the delegates, where the candidates are listed in alphabetical order, and the delegates can vote accordingly, but not by this 51-member colossus entering the election as one candidate, no, as a slate. And it's impossible to challenge them. They have all the votes.
Yeah, that's correct. The last three times there has been what's been known as...
There was no election.
Right.
They read off the names, right? They read off the nominators, and that was it.
Yeah, it's a one-party state.
Yeah, is that good? Is that going to help the labor movement? And imagine how the unorganized must feel.
Well, the unorganized, they probably are, along with a huge percentage of the rank and file, probably don't even know this election's going on.
They do not know what's going on, even, and they're not being informed of what's going on.
That's true.
And no one wants their cooperation. That's the terrible thing about it. And you can't organize without their support.
Yeah,
without the support of the 13 million members. They were sidelined, the union membership. And they are the ones who could make a difference. They are the ones who can make a difference. Because they know, they've been organized. They know what it is to become a union member. And they know how to convey that to other non-union members. And that's my basic program.
Yeah, well, actually, the membership, rank and file membership, has no really sense of ownership of their union.
It's been taken away from them. Today, these leaders, Sweeney and Stern and a few others, Hoff and the rest, feel that the unions are theirs, their private property, and they act that way. Here is Sweeney saying he's got the re-election sewed up, right? What has he got sewed up? He's talked to about 44 international presidents, and they promised him the vote. But the rank and file doesn't know what the hell's going on. He doesn't have the support of the rank and file. He's hardly known to the rank and file, and he's not very, very well liked either. And he's a very poor spokesperson for the labor movement. If you've ever watched him on, heard him in his rare times when he's on television, he's awful.
Yeah, and well,
talk of charisma. Wow, he's a dickbag.
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up. Well, it seemed like for a while they were using Trumka and McEntee.
There are some bright guys on the executive council, and it's a difficult job, but there are bright people, and you see, they're put in the shadows. That's how the AFL-CIO works. You don't upstage the leader. So they've been playing at a low profile. And that's bad. There's no feeling of that there are dynamic people in the labor movement. It's all the same people who don't do anything. You don't know what the hell they're doing. As a matter of fact, do you know that most delegates do not know the people they're voting for? They don't know them. They couldn't recognize them. They don't know their abilities. Isn't that something?
Yeah, I'm amazed. Well, I remember my parents talking about back when they were young in the 30s, somebody like John L. Lewis was as well known as Roosevelt or any other
person. Well, I go back to that era. I was an organizer then.
And it was probably easier to organize, wasn't it?
I was involved. There were strikes all over the place. There was excitement. There was the Harry Bridges in 1934, closed down the West Coast. People were involved in sit-downs. That's one of the reasons we got the National Labor Relations Act. They figured labor is going to make a revolution. We got to calm down. And do you think that the labor movement of today is people are passive? The people are scared. This is not going to be a triumphal CIO movement that Stern is hatching up. Hardly. Hardly. And the fact of the matter is, Stern hasn't been able to convince the rank and file of the other 50 unions. Or their leaders. You don't go into a nationwide campaign with those handicaps. So it's a power play. Power play throughout. And as I said, working people will suffer. If we have to have 4 more years of this, my God, it's going to be terrible.
Yeah, that seems that way in so many realms.
It's going to be terrible.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, Harry, we just got a few minutes here. If you'd like to wrap up and get what you think are your most important points up that maybe we haven't covered.
All right, I can talk for a couple of more minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, take the question of outsourcing, all right? Very important. There's going to be more outsourcing of jobs, not only manufacturing, but white-collar jobs in the next 10 years that will be several times the number that of jobs that have been lost. That happens to be a fact. And what are the unions doing about it? Well, they're telling us, send emails, send faxes, call them up, tell your congressman. Well, that's nonsense. Then the congressmen are not going to do anything about it. And there's no program. Now, here's what I say. I have a two-point program. First, let me talk about the psychological factor. I want to ask you, Bill, if someone came around and took your house away, would you say, well, please, here's my key? Would you be calm about it?
Not at all.
Well, and here they are, there's no excitement. People are losing their jobs and their livelihoods. They're being under terrible pressure. They're losing their pension rights. And what's the excitement from the leadership? They're not doing anything. Now, I would say on that end, any company that is going to go abroad and take away jobs from the American workers, we got to go after them, publicize them, harass them, picket their homes, notify the American public that these are un-American companies. Make it difficult. Make them feel miserable that if they should ever attempt to do that. Does that make any sense?
That's right. They're traitors.
Sure. Well, you know, I go back, as you probably have heard, to the 1930s and the Depression. And I was involved in this kind of thing. You know, they were dispossessing families, putting them on the streets. For furniture, household possessions, and we organized communities to put them back. We put the furniture back into their homes.
Well,
and the sheriffs couldn't, they tried to stop us, but they weren't able to.
Well, that's something you mentioned right there, you organized communities.
That's right.
And I really feel like the labor movement has been sort of isolated from other, what we could call, I guess, community issues and movements.
They're isolated from the rank and file, and they prefer to keep it that way.
Well, the rank and file is most communities. That's
sure. When I say rank and file, I mean the union member who pays dues, who wants to be, they're not even asked to help. They're not even asked to help. Which is terrible. If workers realize that their jobs are at stake, that it's going to get worse unless they become involved, wouldn't they become involved? Oh, there's certainly a lot of them would. And my feeling is that there ought to be a mass mobilization. 13 million members should be notified that they have to be part of a campaign to save our unions and save our jobs. And there are plenty of things that they can do. And that's my major point. Because unless they do that, they're going to sink into a very terrible situation. We're going to lose whatever power we have. Now, my second point is that if you can't stop the multinationals from going abroad, but what you can do is tax them severely to the equivalent of what it would cost, what the loss to American workers would be.
Well, in fact, many of them at least have mailboxes abroad to avoid taxes.
That's right. That's right, a tax. In sufficient amounts so that it would create a fund to reemploy whatever losses American workers had. That would discourage a lot of them from going abroad.
Well, I mean, it's only fair, too.
Sure. What I'm proposing is not radical. It's fair. It's trying to remedy a terrible policy. And I think we've got to act on it. But I have seen no evidence from either Sweeney or Stern except rhetorically. They say how terrible it is, and we got to stop it, but they propose no action whatsoever.
Well, they
and I'm proposing a couple of things that I think can be helpful.
Yeah, that sounds really good. I mean, getting one thing, I mean, just little things like if you have your rank-and-file members post flyers or leave literature and say...
Well, they can do a lot of things.
You know, in laundromats.
They can canvas the unorganized shops. Talk to people in those shops. Tell them about the union. Try to organize them.
That's right. They
can do all kinds. They can have committees going into the communities, working with the communities, building support. I have listed maybe a dozen different things that teams of union members could do.
That's right. Yeah, building community support.
When you say mobilize members, then they want to know, well, what can we do? Well, there are things that they can do, and we've got long lists of them. And if we're going to try to involve them, there's plenty of things we can do. They would do, and I think they would do it willingly if they knew their jobs were at stake.
And I also would imagine, too, that most of them are fairly simple things within the capabilities.
Not complicated. No, I have a list of some of those things, and I'll be talking about them.
And probably they're not very expensive either.
I'm sorry?
They probably wouldn't cost much money either.
No, very little. Very little. A little shoe leather. Nothing much. If they're in the community, look up people, unorganized workers, or whatever workers, and talk about the issues. And we feed them the information.
Well, I tell you, a lot of the people I work with, one thing they like to do is talk.
Of course they do. They'd love to be involved. And they're not given a chance. And what I will propose is give them a chance, involve them. Inspire them. Tell them that we can improve things and cut out this internecine fighting and rivalry and power plays. Let's get together and do this job of mobilizing the union membership.
There you go, Harry. Hey, well, in order to help us get some more information, perhaps you could point us to some internet or other information sources.
Well, I have a website. And I do a weekly column dealing with these very issues that we're talking about here. My website is www.labor-educator.org, O-R-G. And my email address, I don't mind giving it out, is hkelber@igc.org. And I'd be glad to, I think you'll find some very interesting things on the website. I've done a 10-part series, just recently concluded, of all the 10 issues that are involved in this coming in labor's future. And you will get a whole picture of all the issues, ranging from organizing, collective bargaining, politics, restructuring, globalization, leadership, etc., and a lot of other features, because I have 10 pamphlets that I've written dealing with labor subjects, with leadership training, and a lot of other things. So I would suggest, if you have time, to go to my website and find a lot of things that you might find useful.
Well, I tell you what, I've been there, and I'll be there again for sure, and everything that Harry just said is true. His description fits it to a T. And anyway, Harry, I think we're about out of time here.
Right. Well, anyways, Bill, it's a pleasure to be on your program.
Well, I tell you, it's a pleasure to have you on the program, Harry.
Well, good. Yeah. Let's keep in touch.
Yeah, we definitely will. Maybe we'll talk next week, and you can tell us what happened.
All right. Well, I'll be willing.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks again.
All right. Bye-bye.